Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuru Nilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha.
Bhaktivinoda Thakur is instructing everyone to chant Radha Krishna. And he says that Varnitai danced round and round Nadia giving this instruction. It's present instruction. Under the control of this empty, meaningless Maya, we are floating in the ocean of material existence. Essentially, you are. You are floating in the ocean of material existence and eating habudubu, which means sometimes you're coming up above the surface, sometimes you're going underneath, like you're swallowing some water. The jiva, the living being, is the servant of Krishna. We just have to believe and accept this, and we'll have no more problems. When we chant the name of, by chanting the name of Krishna, the hairs will stand on end, tears will flow from the eyes. Bhaktivinoda says, I'm telling you. So chant Radha Krishna and come along with us. These are the only alms that we beg. Bhaktivinoda says that all dangers and troubles go away when that name is chanted. So please return these to me. And please either chant japa somewhere else, or, because you can't do both things at once. You lost the elastic band. Alright, questions? Om Jnanatimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Atapparagamam Shri Guru Navaishnavamsa Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitantam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Purujana Sahitam Krishna Taitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Kishakam Vitamsa Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Any more of these sheets? Alright, please ask.
What is best, crying for the mercy of the Lord and Srimati Radharani while chanting, or just to listen to the mantra? Srila Prabhupada gave both instructions, but the first seems to be more passionate than the latter. Which seems to be more in goodness. Thank you, your servant Bhakta Andre.
It's more passionate to call out from the heart, but that passion is not rajagun. That is the that means the desire to serve Krishna, to love Krishna. So actually, that is required to that is desired to call out with feeling for Krishna. So if we're not calling out with feeling for Krishna, at least we should chant clearly and hear. The instruction to chant clearly and hear is for us because we don't have feeling. Even if we're chanting with feeling, sometimes it may not be very clear. Just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in ecstasy, which chanting out the name of Jagannath, he was saying, jag, 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 jag. Now, if we in our neophyte stage, if we're chanting, that's not ecstasy, that's neglect. So the instruction to chant clearly and hear is to help us, but really we want to come to the stage of chanting with loving feelings for Krishna.
If we are situated in auspicious circumstances for devotional service, can we use our mind or imagination to imagine auspicious circumstances for devotional service?
Yes, it may be done. When you're stuck in the winter in Lithuania, you can certainly meditate on the spiritual land of Vrindavan. However, because the mind is very difficult to control, this is not recommended as a primary process of sadhana in our beginning stages. More emphasis is given on chanting, which can be done in any circumstance. Did someone check? Maybe the toilet door there is open or some bad smell is coming. Some incense can be offered to the deities. Someone who's clean can offer incense. This must be some incense. Alright, well, anyone can just go enlightened and stick it there.
One's varna is determined by the qualities of sattva, rajas and tamas that affect him. How is it possible then for the residents of the spiritual world to have varnas like Rukmini is a kshatriya, Yashoda is a vaishya, Narada and Santipani brahmanas, because there is no influence of the material modes in the spiritual world?
Yesterday, Madhav Maharaj was asking us, or he put to me a similar kind of conundrum. You can, where is it? That, how is it we hear descriptions of Radharani feeling very sleepy when sleep is a product of the mode of ignorance and there's no mode of ignorance in the spiritual world? And in devotion, in pure devotional service, one never becomes tired, he always gets more energy. So I gave the proposition that the tiredness in the spiritual world, that is all ananda chinmaya rasa patibhavita bihi. That is a manifestation of the internal potency meant for affecting Krishna's transcendental pastimes. That is, that the sleepiness of this material world is not like the sleepiness of the spiritual world, which is all meant, everything in spiritual existence is meant for effecting Krishna's pastimes, for facilitating Krishna's pastimes. So this applies in this question also, that divisions of society in the spiritual world are for facilitating different roles to be played for Krishna's pastimes. So the same divisions of society may be there, are in there in the spiritual world and the material world, but they have a different function. Even from the material perspective, the liberated persons who are of kshatriya background in the spiritual world may appear to have similar characteristics to the kshatriyas of the material world who are predominated by the mode of passion. But there is no mode of passion in the spiritual world. There are various kinds of prevailing moods, vyabhichari bhav, which in this material world are reflected or manifested through the various modes of nature. Often questions like this come up. It requires an understanding of the nature of lila to understand these points. Without understanding the principle of lila, then the shastras become incomprehensible. And the descriptions of lila in shastra become incomprehensible.
The next question is, is one's varna still important if he becomes a Vaishnava, especially if he receives a Brahmana initiation?
This is quite a complex topic. Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes that there are vyavaharic Brahmanas, or conventional Brahmanas, vyavaharika, if you want to pronounce it. Vyavaharika Brahmana. They are generally by birth Brahmanas. And they will generally perform the functions of brahmanas as described in shastras. And then there are paramarthic brahmanas, or brahmanas by according to their spiritual position. These two roles may overlap. And someone who's from a shudra family or who's engaged in shudra work may be initiated as a brahmana according to his development of Vaishnavism, because it's understood that by his dedication to Vishnu that he has imbibed the essence of Brahmanism. However, in most cases his occupation won't change. So it's not that if you get Brahman initiation that you say if you're working in some job you have to give that up. Of course Prabhupada very much recommended that householders gravitate towards the land, because to live, because to have the vritti or the livelihood of a shudra especially if one is serving a sinful master, is not best, even for a paramarthic brahmana or Vaishnava. However, it does not disqualify him from his brahmanism, which is based on his brahmanism is based on his Vaishnavism, not based principally on his vritti or livelihood. It's quite a complex subject. If you have that book, Brahmana and Vaishnava, translated in your language, that will be helpful to understand these points. But I think a lot of this may not be very understandable unless you actually spend time in India and see what it means, what a traditional Brahmana way of life is.
Isha Upanishad has this verse that in order to pass over the infinite flow of birth and death, one should understand, only one is able who understands both the process of nescience and process of transcendental knowledge. Mm. Could you please comment on it? Could you explain it in more detail? Thank you.
Well, this doesn't mean that one has to buy a huge encyclopedia and read it all. Everything about the material world. That's not what is meant. But one should acquire that knowledge by which one can discriminate between the material and the spiritual. Just like we meet many people in the course of our preaching and they talk about, yes, I'm very interested in spiritual things. This word spiritual, whatever it may be in your language, is commonly used by people who don't know what it means. They often think spiritual means some kind of mystic powers, or some kind of impersonal meditation. So one should clearly understand what is spiritual and what is material. Okay, who can tell? What's the difference between spiritual and... That's true. But that's not the essential difference. All right, that which is connected with God, but then everything is connected with God. And art and music can be spiritual. It's not that it's all... So we'll give you 2 out of 10 for that. All right, 5 out of 10. But not 10 out of 10. All right, you're supposed to know. See if anyone else has. Let's have an answer from the finished part of God's creation. Finish us off. Translate that? All right, that's the finish. In one sense, there is nothing material. Everything is in relationship with Krishna. But anything conceived of outside of relationship with Krishna, anything taken that this is for my sense enjoyment, that is material. And the vision that everything is meant for the pleasure of Krishna, that is spiritual. That everything should be done for the pleasure of Krishna, that is spiritual. Mm. That's why persons who, often people ask, well, people like Duryodhana saw Krishna. How is that? But they didn't actually see Krishna. They saw him, but they saw him as, because their vision is material, they see everything in terms of their sense enjoyment. So Duryodhana saw Krishna as an object of obstruction to his sense enjoyment. And when he went to Krishna, wanting to beg help from Krishna in the battle, he thought of Krishna as a possible aid to his sense enjoyment. So even seeing Krishna can be material. Whereas seeing stool can be spiritual. I'll give an example of that. Once Prabhupada was walking with his disciples in a park in the morning, and Prabhupada saw under the branch of one tree, there were many bird droppings. And Prabhupada pointed at the bird droppings with his cane and said, "What does this mean?" So devotees were wondering. Maybe there's some mystic message in the pattern of the stool or something like that. I don't know if they were thinking that. Maybe I would have thought that. So no one can answer, and Prabhupada said that the fact that they're passing stool in this same place means they can go anywhere and pass stool, but they're attached to this particular spot for passing stool. Just see how attached they are. So this is the vision to Prabhupada's vision that he's always distinguishing between material and spiritual. He wasn't going... Cultivating material, the knowledge of nescience, doesn't mean that he was going to take the droppings and have them chemically analyzed. But where we might just see material, he saw spiritual. This is a symptom of the conditioned soul's forgetfulness of Krishna. And where we might see material only, he saw spiritual. Just like you can hear, there's one tape of one of Prabhupada's early lectures in 1966, where a drunken wreck comes in off the street into the 26th Second Avenue Temple. And as it's described in Prabhupada Lilamata, he came in and he made some noise, and he put down some toilet rolls on the side. And people saw, you know, some crazy bum came in and put some toilet rolls and went out. Prabhupada said, he has begun his devotional service. He's donated some toilet rolls. Not that devotees use toilet rolls, but knowingly or unknowingly, probably unknowingly, he had made some donation, however insignificant. Now, one answer was given that spiritual is eternal and material is temporary. That's also true. Because this material atmosphere is one of forgetfulness of Krishna, so it's created in the manner Nasato Vidyate Bhavo Na Bhavo Vidyate Sataha. It's created in such a way that everything here is temporary. So that's true, but it's not the essence of that which is material is a forgetfulness of Krishna or a lack of desire to serve him or positive desire not to serve him. So we should know what is spiritual and what is material. Sometimes we hear descriptions, some Babaji fell in Radha Kund and he stayed there for 7 days and then he came out. And people say, well, very spiritual. Maybe. But if someone's fully engaged in the preaching mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that we know for sure is spiritual, as long as the motive is to satisfy Krishna, not for one's own name and fame. Sometimes we're told about people, they go into trance, chanting Hare Krishna. And we might think, well, that's very spiritual. But then generally genuine devotees, they don't show such symptoms. They don't try to exhibit any such symptoms of ecstasy. So we may maintain some doubt, is this actually spiritual or not? But Srila Prabhupada's sincere endeavor to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world was punctuated very rarely by involuntarily floating into trances of ecstasy. That we know Prabhupada's, his trances of ecstasy are not more spiritual than his pointing out the bird droppings. It's not more spiritual than his pointing out the bird droppings to instructors. They are both manifestations of his intense, which word you don't have in Russian, desire to serve Krishna. And the fact that Prabhupada, he didn't like to show that he would, he actually apologized that, I'm sorry, I don't do that often, he said. He didn't want to show that this, it was just to make a show of being a devotee, but he wanted to, the real essence of being a devotee is his constant desire to serve Krishna. To constantly serve Krishna. Okay.
Hare Krishna.
Could you write it down? Can I write it down like everyone else?
He argues that the essence of the question was not answered. But the question itself was just to expand a little bit more on this topic.
Let him write it down. This is a questions and answers session. It's not like it's not a discussion. So, you know, any question, there can be further questions on the answer. And so we're trying to go through different questions. We're just giving general answers. We can't expect to thoroughly cover the answers to any of these questions. And if you please, if you want, write it down, we can continue like that.
Can we eat fruits from yajna, fire? Do they still contain simple reactions? Is there a difference in fruits from marriage yajna and initiation yajna?
Brahmacharis don't eat fruits from marriage yajnas. You might end up getting pregnant. There's that one king mentioned in the Bhagavatam. He drank the water that was meant for the woman, and he got the Mandhata, Maharaj Mandhata. He drank the water meant for his wife, so she can get pregnant, and he got pregnant. Well, if you're so eager to get the benefit of eating the fruit from the yajna, who's going to eat the raw eggplant that was put around the fire? Anyone ever ate raw eggplant before? It doesn't make a very good salad. In the Karma Kandiya Yajna, that consideration may be there, some kind of sinful reaction enters into the brain. But in a Vaishnav Yajna, why should that be? It's of a different quality. So I don't find any philosophical problem with taking the fruit. But if you're afraid to, don't. That's all. It's plenty of prasad.
Can we eat buckwheat on Ekadashi?
Prabhupada did regularly. I suppose if Prabhupada did, we can do also. It was being broadcast by one of our god brothers that you shouldn't do so. I asked him to give some Shastra Praman and he couldn't, so. This question will probably come for the next 20 years now. We should be very careful before we speak. We should see if it's in line with Shastra. And I asked Harishori Prabhu, who was serving Prabhupada for so many years, and he said that Prabhupada regularly took buckwheat on Mecca. Well, I guess that's good enough. If Prabhupada did, I'm sure we can do also. Some difficulty may come because what may be defined as a grain according to Vedic understanding may be different to that of modern biological understanding. Although according to modern biological understanding, buckwheat is not a grain. It's definitely much lighter than any grain. Actually, in Shastra, there are given lists of food which are anukalpa or substitutes. So Grishka doesn't come in that. But then many of the things we take on Ekadashi don't either, because Prabhupada broadened the understanding of anukalpa to include anything that isn't grains and beans. So if we say we shouldn't take Grishka, then there are so many other things we shouldn't take, and I might as well just fast anyway. As our devotees say, well, you can't take tomatoes, you can't take this kind of, you can't take this rock salt, and you can't take this, and just fast, that's all. Don't eat. How is any mantra connecting us with the spiritual plane? It's a spiritual sound vibration. It's not of this material world. The pranam mantra is an expression of respect and submission. That respect and submission is the entry to the spiritual plane of Krishna consciousness. Just like you pick up your cell phone and you dial and then you speak to someone who's 50 miles or 50 kilometers away. How does it happen? We don't exactly understand the technology, but we take advantage of it. So how does the chanting of mantras connect us with the spiritual personalities to whom they are aimed? We may not exactly understand the how it works, but it does work, so take advantage of it. All goes through the agency of Paramatma. He is the transcendental telephone operator. Of course, he's a lot more than a telephone operator, but for the sake of an example. Many times, this red light is flashing. What does that mean? The battery is low? Many times, I've heard from God brothers how devotees tell them that God brother has appeared in their dream and given them some instruction which is very relevant to their lives. My God brother's told to me. But the God brother himself wasn't aware of it. Tells something like, you've got to start studying Prabhupada's books very carefully every day. That has a very profound, you can imagine it has a very profound effect on people's lives when that happens. But the devotee who's giving that instruction in the dream is not personally aware of it. That's arranged by Paramatma. It's real. And the person giving the instruction is giving it, even though he may not be aware of it. Because that person appears in the dream because he has some affection and desire to help that person, and that becomes manifested through the agency of Paramatma. Anyone ever had a dream like that? Many. Yes, they may be called spiritualists from one perspective and materialists from another. Just like that question came up last night, is Balaram exactly the same as Krishna? Yes, Prabhupada agreed. And then, no, yes, Prabhupada agreed, that's also true. So many things are like that. It depends on which perspective we take it from. Persons who are interested in personal liberation and who have controlled their senses and reached the that platform of being beyond the modes of material nature, they may certainly be called spiritualists, because that's their interest. So from the perspective of ordinary material life, of ordinary materialistic people, they're certainly spiritualists. But from the perspective of pure devotional service, they're still outside the boundaries of that. Yeah, from the perspective of pure devotional service, and even though they're fully engaged or they're fully absorbed in Brahman, the basic principle of material life, which is neglect of Krishna, is still as prominent in them as that of gross materialists. So it's only a matter of time before they again come to that platform. Yena ravindaksha vimukta manas trayasta bhava devishuddha buddhaya aruhya kritchena parang padang tata patanti adho anadrita yashodangraha. Those who elevate themselves by severe austerities to the impersonal spiritual platform, they fall again due to neglecting the lotus feet of Krishna. So they're spiritualists in as much as they're not interested in this material world, but they're materialists in as much as they're not interested in Krishna. And if we have to definitively put them in one category or the other, we have to say they're materialists. No. Spiritual life is meant to be executed under guidance. One should take permission before reading, especially these higher intimate literatures. One should not think of reading them without taking permission. If one has not imbibed the basic principles of Krishna consciousness, then to go to these rasa shastras will not be helpful. That will be not only not helpful, but will be harmful for one's spiritual development.
Why is it that all souls Srila Prabhupada valued book distribution so highly? Many of the great distributors of yore are not around anymore. Thank you.
Not around where? Krishna hasn't forgotten them. Just like Prabhupada was describing once, that those who go out to fight on the front lines, they're taking the greatest risk. So the government, they will recognize that. So in the same way, some of those who have taken the greatest risk have become, they may have become hit by the bullets of Maya, but Krishna will never forget them. You'll see them again. It often happens. Just like Buddhimanta Prabhu, one of the first great names in book distribution. I mean, we could, who wants to tell Buddhimanta stories? We can be here for hours. Anyway, superficially, he forgot Krishna after some time. And then Krishna came to him in the form of brain cancer. Then he remembered Krishna again. He came to Vrindavan and left this world from there. Don't think that there's anything wrong with this process. There's no loss. There's great gain in serving Krishna. Especially those who risk everything to preach Krishna consciousness. They are certainly protected by Krishna. Right, Ladvanshi Prabhu? Haven't we seen that again and again and again?
Is it better to throw prasadam, throw away prasadam probably, than to eat a little more than what one needs? Are there different reactions for throwing prasadam in the bin to plants or to animals?
Don't throw away prasadam. Throw away mercy. Krishna's giving you mercy and you want to throw it out. Don't take more on your plate than you can eat. It's a simple formula. If by chance you're looking the other way, I mean, this should be followed very rigidly, but if by chance the server does what he doesn't do, which is when you're not looking, puts on far more than you can eat, then in that case you could maybe feed it to birds or something like that, not to cows. We don't give our remnants to our mothers. But as a general practice, there should be no question of throwing out prasadam. The very thought of doing so is offensive. It's not ordinary food. Well, I don't even want to discuss that because, we don't want to throw it out, that's all.
Okay. Does it necessarily mean that we will have ghosts and spirits around it in our house?
Not necessarily. Yanti deva vrata devan. If you worship the Madhyajanopi Yanti Mam, worship Krishna, go to Krishna. That's Srila Prabhupada came to teach us pure devotional service. He didn't teach us to worship demigods. Now theoretically one could do so, thinking of Lord Shiva as the great Vaishnava. But it's important to consider that Srila Prabhupada didn't teach us to do so. So why should we take that up? It's not required for our advancement in Krishna consciousness. And due to the misconceptions which may come while doing so, it's probably best not to.
Some devotees are practicing Krishna consciousness on festivals, but because of the weakness of heart, they do not practice at home. At home, they sink into Maya. Can they possibly progress?
Make progress.
There's a process for making advancement. If we follow it, we make advancement. If we don't, we don't. So if you don't follow the process, then how can you make advancement? Of course, it's good to come to the festival, but it's better to practice at home also. If you weren't present when it was answered, wait for the next fire sacrifice and you can ask them. I'm so eager for bananas. Is there like a banana shortage in this country?
Can we interpret your answer to my question on Ishapanishad that the process of submerging into nations means studying the laws of...
Could you get one of each of my books from the book table?
Laws which move the material energy.
Oh, sorry, I was not concentrating. Sorry.
Can we interpret your answer that submerging into nations means studying the laws that guide, govern the material nature and process of developing transcendental knowledge means developing ability to see the original energy that is Krishna in all these laws?
I guess yes, you can interpret it, and that's an easy answer for me. You can interpret it like that. Of course you could interpret it in unlimited number of ways also. So, that's it? No? Well, don't do it, that's all. Once you've done it, so better not do it. Often devotees ask, you know, how can we get free from this offense or that? But the best answer is don't do it in the first place. Otherwise, if we're thinking so much how to get free from the offense, it's almost like we're calculating. Okay, I'm going to go up and slap him in the face, and then after that I'm going to, you know, perform a fire sacrifice or something like that. Like Indra with Chitraketu, who what was the name of that demon? Twashta, son of Twashta. He killed the demon who was the son of a brahmana. And he'd planned in advance how to get free from the reaction, but it didn't work like that. Okay. Vritrasa.
Oh, yeah, yes. Vritrasa.
Our own nonsense, under various categories. Again, all nonsense can be summarized in one main category, which is a lack of desire to serve Krishna. So it's essential to go on hearing the pure Krishna katha while engaged in the process of chanting. That means we have a time for chanting and a time for hearing. So by hearing we understand what is pure Krishna consciousness, what are the obstacles to that, what is the nature of pure devotional service. Well, brahmanas can, if they're actually brahmanas. I mean, according to Vedic culture, brahmanas can accept and shudras can accept.
Okay.
Next
one. Hare Krishna.
Actually, just one point. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur commented or gave instruction that at the top of a piece of paper we shouldn't write Hare Krishna. He said because it becomes as if we're taking the position of guru to others. Traditionally at the top of a piece of paper in Vedic culture, when one's writing a letter, one will write the name of his worshipable deity or of Ganesh. So Vaishnavas they usually write Sri Hari, or in Gauriya Vaishnava, Sri Sri Guru Garango Jayate. All glories to Sri. Or some similar thing. It's all coming in that Vaishnava etiquette book when I mentioned it. Anyway.
Please explain, if Guru is an external manifestation of Krishna, how to understand that?
Because he speaks the message of Krishna relevant to our particular lives. Krishna has given Shastra, which gives a very wide range of general directions, and Guru explains Shastra as is relevant to our individual lives. So in that sense, Guru is none different from Krishna in as much as he speaks the same message of Krishna with the same potency as Krishna. There are many such how-to questions. How to be sincere, how to stay awake while chanting, how to overcome unnecessary anger. One general reply for all these questions is to, by good association. Particularly if we see that we're lacking in some area, it's good to associate with devotees who possess that quality that we lack, and to study their character and benefit by doing so. Studying shastras like Ramayana, Mahabharata, these also help us to inculcate good qualities, because we see in the characters described there how these good qualities are manifested in their lives.
On the other hand, Srila Prabhupada said a true sannyasi can be one who is working in a factory, giving up all the results of his work to Krishna.
No, Prabhupada said that there is good as sannyasi. Yeah, well, let's clarify first of all that Prabhupada wrote that devotees who they're as good as sannyasis if they're doing so, but it's not expected that those who formally take sannyas will do so. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explained that this prohibition against taking sannyas comes in Brahma Vaivarta Purana, which is a Rajasic Purana, especially meant for people in the Karma Kanda. So he says that the sannyas that is proscribed there is karma sannyas, that the giving up of karmic activities, but the transcendental sannyas of dedicating one's life in the service of Mukunda is an eternal principle that is never proscribed.
What means supreme enjoyer? Is it true that living entity is enjoyed more than Krishna by serving him than he himself? If so, what is the meaning of Krishna as supreme enjoyer?
Very good question. Krishna as the supreme enjoyer means that everything is, his position is to have everything offered to him and everyone serve him for his enjoyment. The constitutional position of the jiva is to serve Krishna to enhance Krishna's enjoyment. And the constitutional position of Krishna is to accept that service and to be the supreme enjoyer. So Krishna's function is that of the supreme enjoyer. By his mercy, he invests in his Vladini Shakti or Bhakti Shakti, his internal potency of enjoyment. He invests in that the experience of enjoyment that the servants may have even more than he. So Krishna's function is that of the supreme enjoyer. But by his mercy, the jivas their experience of enjoyment may be not the jivas, but especially that of Radharani. Maybe that more of Krishna. You see the distinction? Krishna's position is that of the supreme enjoyer. Everything is offered to him for his enjoyment. Maybe more in his servants. But their bliss comes not from... When we're talking about enjoying, it means enjoying objects. It means Krishna enjoys being served with nice food. He enjoys embracing the gopis, etc.
Is it objects or not objects?
No, these are all objects of enjoyment. So in this way, Krishna is the supreme enjoyer of all objects of enjoyment. But the bliss that others get from serving Krishna is not by enjoying, but by serving. So Krishna is still the supreme enjoyer, even though others may enjoy more than him. They may experience more bliss than him, but enjoy means to enjoy a particular object. I think, alright.